interview with Harry Hubbard, H-U-B-B-A-R-D, President, Texas AFL-CIO, Austin, Texas, December 17th, 1974.
Mr. Hubbard, give us just a little brief summary of your own background. What was your union affiliation?
Well, I guess to begin with, I'll just give it to you as brief as I can. I'm from Deep East, Texas, and finished high school there, went to the Navy in 1942, came out, and the first union I joined was a hod carriage union, helping bricklayers as a laborer, and then went to work for in synthetic rubber production in Fort Hays, Texas, became a member of the Oil, Chemical, Atomic Workers Union. During the Eisenhower administration, we saw the cutback in production that you're seeing now under every Republican administration, and I was laid off, then got a job as a bread salesman for Fairmaid Baking Company, and was a member of the Teamsters Union 3.5 years, and steward for that union. And then the Democratic administration came back into power, and production then opened back up in synthetic rubber production, and I went back into that in 1950 and picked up my membership in all chemical atomic workers, where I've been a member ever since. So actually I'm member of the All Chemical Atomic Workers for about 25 years.
And you were elected AFL-CIO president in what year?
Last year. Well, about a year and a half ago.
Is there a board? A state, what do they call it?
We have an executive board, Texas AFL-CIO executive board, but actually we're elected. Texas AFL-CIO has two elective offices. Secretary of Treasury and the President. And actually, in 1966, I came with the FLCO as a full-time legislative director on the staff. Served 6 years as legislative director. 4 years ago, ran for Secretary of Treasury and was elected Secretary of Treasury, and then a year and a half ago, was elected President of the organization. The election being held through convention process, the same.
You know, in round numbers, how many union members there are in Texas?
There's approximately 450,000.
And how many are AFL-CIO affiliated?
Affiliated with us, approximately, because we just got a local in this morning with 1,000 members, but 236,000. Now, when I say a union member in Texas, I'm talking about also UAW Teamsters. No, excuse
me. What percent of the workforce in Texas is unionized?
About 18%.
18. What does that rank with the other southern states, you know?
In the southern states, it's probably about the same. It runs in the southern states, 18 to 25.
Has it been increasing or decreasing or about holding steady?
It's been increasing slightly, very slightly. In fact, I guess you can say it holding steady more than it's been increasing.
What's the monthly per member contribution that goes to the state office?
As far as per capita is concerned, right. 25 cents per member, 236,000. 25 cents per member.
That's slightly above average, isn't it, in the South, 25 cents.
So. Yeah, except in Louisiana.
Right.
Big D city in Louisiana has, I don't know, they're up 50 or 60%, 50 or 55 cents, I think. I think they went up to 55 cents the last convention last year.
But then most states don't have a Victor Busey.
That's true. I wish they did. He's a great one.
What has been your role in Democratic Party politics?
Well, I've been involved in Democratic Party politics for years, way back when I was in Jefferson County as a precinct worker and campaign chairman for state Senate candidates and all that. But our recent role in Democratic politics in the last couple of years is to try to open the Democratic Party up to minorities, and we're labeled to have more voice in Texas in the Democratic Party, and worked with the governor and the United States and the Democratic senator and the process to select delegates to precinct level to do that, and did that at the last convention, where we saw the State Democratic Executive Committee membership change to where we had, Labor had three members on the SDC. Now they have, we have seven. There were two blacks, there are now five. There were two browns, and there's five browns on the SDC.
Out of a total of how many members?
Out of a total of 62, I believe. Then, in addition to that, the mini convention in Kansas City, we had 14 delegates going there that were either union members or union members' wives. I guess probably twice as many as we've ever had going from labor delegates to the national convention.
When did the party start to open up to labor? Just recently?
Well, I would say the party started opening up recently to minorities, period, and we consider ourselves a minority. 18%, you can't consider it any other way. So I would say within the last 2 years, with the new rules in the Democratic Party, the McGovern and following up by the McCluskey rules, the affirmative action programs, which followed along that line, I would say in the last 2 years, actually, the party's been opened up. And it wasn't because they really wanted to, because it's forced to. And that's the role that we've been playing. We've not done it, and so to speak, by force, but we've done it by getting on the inside and making sure that the party is opened up by working inside rather than fighting.
What changes have you seen in the legislature and the way it operates since you went to work up there when in 66?
66.
Have there been any substantive changes in the legislature?
There's been changes again. And the Texas FLCL were very instrumental in those changes because we were the one that fought the battles in court to make sure that we had single member districts, which brought about the big change that you've seen in the last 6, 8, 10 years. Single-member districts brought on where you'd have, 10 years ago, maybe two black members sitting in the House. Now you have, 12, two in the Senate, and Barbara Jordan, for instance, in Congress. All of this was brought about by single-member districts. And we were very instrumental in bringing that about. That's the main thing. What it really did, it kind of brought the legislature from a rurally dominated legislature more to a metropolitan type legislature, although there's still an awful lot of rural domination there, but there are still three large metropolitan areas in Texas that don't have single member districts, which we hope to get in the next session of the legislature.
During the past 25 years, has that been the most significant change, or have there been others?
I think you'd have to say that's been the most significant change because up until single-member districts, the Texas legislature was just completely dominated by rural elements of the state, as it is, I guess, most all southern states, or has been.
What other changes have occurred during that time?
You mean so far as issues are concerned?
Politics.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, it's, for example, in the governor's race, the governor's racist contest.
Well, there's been some, of course, I guess I'd have to say that the corruption in government has brought about quite a change when you start talking about politics, because of, you know, the Sharpstown thing where Barnes and Smith was involved and all that, which brought about the change, and elected a Doc Briscoe governor who could have never been elected without that. Elected a Bill Hobby lieutenant governor who could have never been elected without the Sharpstown scandal that pretty well took care of some of the leading politicians in the state. I think there's been, I'd have to say that there is less in the last 6 years domination by the corporations of state government and state government officials. Briscoe, of course, is no dynamic leader as far as governor's concerned, by no means. But then on the other hand, he's not controlled. For instance, like the John Conleys were, and evidently the Preston Smiths were. They're not completely dominated by the corporate interests of the state. So in that respect, there has been quite a change as far as domination by the corporation.
How about the role of AFL-CIO in politics? Has that changed?
Well, we hope that it has. We hope that we that we're doing more of it and being more effective and having more of a voice. And we intend to have more. Between now and 1976, we're going to put together an organization, AFL-CIO, where we can identify every precinct in the state, have them on computer cards, and be ready in 1976. And I'd say yes. It's
how are you coming with that voter identification program?
As far as the precinct?
Yeah, the identification of the union members and so on.
We're
registered, non-registered.
Very well. We have 31 area councils throughout the states. Those 31 councils have a women's activities department. And we keep a card file on every member that identifies them as to whether they're registered to vote, what their precinct is, their telephone number, and everything, where we can be in constant contact with them, especially in voter education. And our computer system on our membership is better than it's ever been, more up to date than it's ever been. So we think we're doing very well in that respect. This identification of precincts and is going to be something new that we've never done, and we're going to begin that in January.
At one time, the FFL-CIO endorsement on a candidate was often considered a kiss of death. Is that still true?
No. We have everyone from U.S. Senate on down who comes to our convention and openly seeks our endorsement.
Now, has that been a change?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, it's been a change. Of course, they recognize, we recognize, that with 18% of the membership, that we're not going to go out and elect people that we would like to elect. So, on the other hand, candidates recognize that we do have enough influence to where that we could. We may not can win, but we can certainly defeat
him. Am I correct that organized labor supported Farenthold in 72?
Right.
And Briscoe in 74?
In 74, we supported Briscoe in the general election over Granberry. In 72, we supported Briscoe in the general election. Democrats, of course. In 74, we took no position in the Farenthold Briscoe primary.
In 72, though, they did.
72, I just don't recall. It seems to me like we did the same thing. we had a split vote on endorsing Farenthold, and I voted to endorse Farenthold, but I don't remember whether we gave an endorsement or whether we just said something nice about both of them in 72.
What's been the relationship with Briscoe? We've been told that Briscoe had more of an open door policy toward organized labor, appointed more people to boards and commissions.
That's
Is that
true.
True?
That's very true.
What's been the difference between Briscoe and previous governors insofar as organized labor is concerned?
I'd have to say that the only difference I see is a changing of attitude of people, and then on the other hand, I think that we've conducted our business more out in the open than honest, and not saying that we didn't in past years, but I think everything's been out in the open, and there's been more frankness between our organization and, say, the governor's office. And I think probably if there's any one thing, that I'd have to say that when Briscoe does something for labor, he don't go around the back door to do it, afraid somebody else, somebody's going to know what's going on or something like that. I think I'd just have to say more openness on the part of the governor's office and the FLCIO.
Do you have any problem with access to the governor? And if you want to see him, you can see him. Is that basically right? How about what type of appointments has he made that involve labor people?
He's appointed, I can give you a list of them, but he's appointed Joe Gunn, Texas Employment Commission, who was president of the biggest CWA local in Houston, is also president of the Harris County FLCL Council with 85,000 members. And in fact, just called me last night. Said he's going to reappoint him probably today. He appointed Jackie Sinclair, who was the assistant to Gerald Brown, Executive Secretary of State Building Trades, appointed him to as Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Standards. He's appointed C.E. Long from San Antonio to the Mass Transit Commission. He appointed Ray Johnson to the Commission on Aging, who's the retired IBEW International representative. I'd have to get you the list.
Is this a departure from previous governors?
I'd have to say so. There's previous governors have made one or two token appointments here and there. I'd have to say too, I think that, again, it's more openness on the part of the FLCIO, where when I was elected president, we established an appointments committee. It was made up of a representative from each international union that had over 10,000 members affiliated with us. They act as an appointments committee, and all the recommendations for appointment to the governor comes into that appointments committee. They screen them and then recommend to the officers of the FFL-CIO, and in turn we recommend to the governor. This is all done openly. We send letters out to all the locals, say if you have anyone that's interested in appointment, get their resume into the appointments committee and we'll handle it that way. I think probably that's one of the main reasons, again, that we made it plain to the governor that we're not just looking for token appointments. We're going to recommend people to you that comes from the appointments committee that we think is qualified. We're not looking for just token appointments for somebody that's a political friend of mine or something like that.
Are most of these appointments to labor oriented towards a position, or do they go to other kinds of boards too?
Well, most of them, of course, that we seek are labor oriented positions. But for instance, we'll be recommending Paul Teague, who's chairman of our education committee, with operating engineers in Texas City, we'll be recommending him to the college coordinating board. And I think, a pretty good opportunity. We never had anyone serve on any of the major university board of regents or coordinating board, and I think have a pretty good chance. We'll be moving into some other areas in education where all of our membership has a concern. We've got people serving on the Texas Alcoholics Commission, for instance. We've got two people on the Texas State Technical Institute Board of Regents, and various places like that. But generally, we look at the Industrial Accident Board, Labor Commissioner, Texas Employment Commission, and areas like that.
Did you work to kill the document produced by the Constitutional Convention?
In a file analysis, yeah. We had to.
Based on the right to work provision?
Yes. Yes, we told them in the very beginning, in no uncertain terms, that if they allowed emotional material, statutory material, that's in the statutes, opened up the Constitution to remove all the deadwood, and the statutory material had been placed in there by politicians for their own purposes, that needed to be removed. But if they were going to replace it with the same kind of material for political purposes, then such a right to work, then we'd fight it, because we was not going to go along and see the Republican Party have issues at the expense of our Texas Constitution. We were not going to build some kingmaker by allowing him to say that he was father of the Constitution, no matter what was in it. So in final analysis, we had to oppose it and did kill the Constitution. Revision process. Yeah. But didn't want to do it, we had to do it. But we told them in the very beginning we'd do it.
Texas Democratic Party, unlike other parties in the South, has a significant liberal faction. We're having trouble finding out just exactly what a Texas liberal is and how it differs from a Texas moderate or a Democratic conservative.
It's hard to figure out, because I'm a Texas liberal. But I'm
what
sure
does that mean
that the
to
Texas
you?
Liberal would class me as a Texas moderate to conservative, because of my association with the Democratic Party. Well, what it means to me is that in my estimation, we can get more done and we can change the party more to our satisfaction by working within the party, rather than standing off and busting your head against a brick wall. That's what it means to me. The liberal element, what is known today as the liberal element of the party, of course, as you all know, Billy Carr, Ronnie Duggar, and all those folks, I agree with them. I agree with them, and we work together. But then on the other hand, where I guess I'm not as liberal as they are, is a liberal in Texas historically has had the crusade for causes. And where I drop off in their eyesight as a liberal is when you crusade for years and years for the cause, and then you get to the point that where you can reap the benefits of your crusade and refuse to take the benefits because you lose your cause to crusade. And that's the difference in my liberalism and I guess what you'd call their liberalism.
Are you saying an inability to compromise or to reach an agreement?
Well, I guess that might be, I guess you could say it in that manner. But historic liberals in Texas has just had to have something cause to rally around.
Are there any liberals in statewide office today?
Well, there are some that would say that Bob Armstrong, the land commissioner, was liberal. There were some that would say John White was liberal, our agriculture commissioner.
Yeah, well, White told us he considers himself a moderate.
Right. Well, I imagine most everybody, except Billy Carr and Ronnie Duggar and a few people like that today, would say that they were moderates instead of liberals. Well, but I don't think people put as much stock in labels as far as politics is concerned as they did in the past. Because
so that's diminishing that?
I think so. For instance, I've supported every liberal cause that came down from the very beginning, and that goes all the way through the McGovern campaign, the Sissy Farenthal campaign of 72, not 74. Right on through, every liberal candidate and every liberal cause. There's no organization that can anywhere put the record of what we've done in civil rights and social legislation. None. And that includes the liberal wing of the party.
Would your support of Driscoll in 74 be an example of what you meant about there's no point in keep going on the Farenthal race?
Well, of course,
that point had been proved in 72.
Then that particular one, even the liberals, every liberal that I know of was advising her not to get into that campaign. It was encouraging her to get in a campaign that she could win, like the Railroad Commission. And it was a personality thing, I suppose. She was just had so much hatred toward Driscoll, she just had to do it. But every liberal from here to New York to Washington advised her, don't do it, stay out of it. And I've got letters from some of the top liberals in the country saying, stay out of it, and in 76 you'll be in a position to move into, the national administration. Don't do it, because when you get beat so bad, you're going to blame labor, you're going to blame the blacks, you're going to blame Mexican Americans, and just exactly what happened. So, certainly if I had my choice of who I would like to see governor of the state of Texas, it would be Sissy Farenthal or Don Yarbrough or someone like that. But still, but also you have to deal in realities too.
So your liberal ideology has tempered the little practical politics. What you're saying is that the liberal in Texas tends not to do that.
I guess what I'm saying is that that if you continue to butt your head against that wall to accomplish something, and you see a door over there that you haven't seen before, you're going to walk through that door rather than just keep butting your head against the wall.
Not if you're basically paranoid. Or masochistic.
Well, I don't think I am. But I don't know if it makes sense, but that's just I'm trying in my plain language to explain to you as I see it. But as far as philosophy, liberalism, I figure I'm just as liberal as Billy Carr or Ronnie Duggar or any of the other those folks. It's just the thing about it. Somewhere along the line you have to accomplish something. It's just that simple.
What role do you foresee labor playing in the upcoming fight on school finance?
I think we'll play a leading role in it. We've been very actively involved with Senator Mozzie, who's working up the bill. We've been very actively involved with the governor's office and Dr. Hooker, who's putting together a governor's program, which is going to be essentially the Mozzie bill. And our education director has been working with the Texas Education Agency, and we've been working with...
Is that going to involve additional taxation?
Well,
formula allocation?
At this particular time, we don't think that it is. They've got $1.5 billion built up already. We've got a comptroller that's coming in that I think is going to... You talk about liberals. I think Bob Bullock, who was 10 years ago as conservative as they come today, been elected by liberals to the moderates, the state comptroller, says that he's going to go out and collect taxes that's out there that corporations are not paying, that many people are not paying. And I think he'll do it.
Do you see him as some future role for him in state politics? Bullock?
I think he's definitely going to be someone to contend with in higher circles in Texas politics, politically.
Is the basic issue that divides the conservatives and moderates and liberals taxation, the issue of the corporate profits tax and personal income tax? No.
That taxation really don't, although it should, really don't get involved in liberal versus conservative to moderates. Taxation in Texas just has never been that involved. For instance, on the passage of state sales tax in Texas, and the increase in the sales tax and all that, certainly the liberals fall on the side of anti-sales tax because it affects the poor people more and all that. And there is, the liberals' issues are always with, generally with the poor people. But as far as taxation is concerned, I don't think you can use that as a dividing point, liberal versus conservative, not Texas.
Is it the role of government?
Taxation?
No, the difference between a conservative group and a liberal group.
I think it is. I think it's the role of government, and generally the... we liberals feel like that, as I said in the beginning, that state government has been, and still to a certain extent, pretty well dominated by corporations, rurally dominated, and therefore liberals are going to fall over on the anti-establishment side. And on any particular issue, it's just a matter of whether you... At the division point, liberal versus conservative, moderate, what have you, I think the division point is whether you want to be just continue to be adamant, anti-establishment, or whether you want to try to achieve something, no matter whether it's an issue of personality in politics or what.
Do you see that corporate world influence continuing to diminish in the future?
You said after 76.
After 76.
Until the Republicans make their complete payoff to the corporation that bought the country out in 1768. I think that the Ford administration will continue to make a payoff to the corporations as long as they're there, because they have to. They don't have any choice.
What's your reaction to Lloyd Benson as a potential presidential candidate?
Well, of course, with the Kennedy dropping out, Mondale dropping out, and looking at what's there right now, I think probably Senator Benson is probably about as good as anything else that we're looking at right now. I'm pleased with Senator Benson's voting record generally since he's been in the U.S. Senate on issues of concern to labor. Has about a 70% voting record, which he's having lived down in some other circles. And so I would say generally that labor in Texas is not unhappy with his performance at this time, and generally would be in support for his move to seek the presidency.
How significant is the role he played in the pension reform?
I'm really not sure. What party actually played what you would know is to be there is the inner working of finally coming out and passing the bill. I know that he received an awful lot of credit. Now, what he did as far as the eventual passing of the legislation, I'm not just certain. But in the eyes of the people, in the eyes of the workers, he evidently played a pretty big part.
What's the sort of question you get asked about Benson from labor leaders in other states and in Washington?
Well, several came over to our delegation in Kansas City and asked that particular question, which Benson there says, you know, really, I guess every one of the questions started out with, well, you know, we've heard a lot about Senator Benson, and what we hear, we like, but we want to hear it from officers of the AFL-CIO in Texas. What do you think about him? Of course, my reaction is, well, we're generally pleased with his performance on labor issues at this point. And then those that we're looking at seeking the president nomination at this time, and we're happy about it. That's about, I guess, the reaction of both sides.
How do you compare him with Yarbrough as a senator?
Well, of course, Senator Yarbrough is was when he was defeated by Benson, I worked full time in Senator Yarbrough's campaign office over here on 12th Street for about 2 months. Moved my office over there. And every time he ever run for office, with strong support of him. And again, if I had my choice of the U.S. senators, it would be Senator Yarbrough. I guess mostly because on issues of concern to people in general, you didn't ever have to worry about where Senator Yarbrough was going to be. And probably that's the reason he's not the U.S. Senator today. Because he was so open and forthright. And when he did something, he felt was good for the people he liked to brag about.
Do you get involved in quite a few statewide races, or just the major ones like governor and senator? Do you get involved, for example, with the Railroad Commission?
Generally, we don't get too involved. We usually make a recommendation.
But how about in terms of endorsements and money?
Yeah, we usually we do not contribute money in statewide races or like U.S. Senate. Of course, U.S. Senate and House, that money, if there's any money to be contributed, comes from the national code.
And you concentrate on the state legislature?
State legislature, and in some cases, city councils, commissioner's court, judges.
And most of that activity is in the primaries?
Well, yeah, generally, unless there's some strong opposition in the general election. We're in Texas, up in recent years, primary election in Texas is pretty well tantamount to election in the general, where Democrats are concerned. That's changing some.
Does the area council make the decision as to which candidate you're going to support?
The area council recommends in all cases to our convention.
For state legislature, too?
Yes.
What sort of assistance do you provide legislative candidates that you endorse?
We some finances, for instance, in a state house race. Usually the tops in a state house race is average probably $250 to $500. In a state senate race, it'd be anywhere from $500 to $1,500. The finances is kind of insignificant as compared to our assistance in manpower, womanpower, campaign organization, telephone and block work, and all those things. That's where we concentrate mostly.
Are you the head of COPE?
Yes. we have a constitutional convention every 2 years, officers' election, constitution changes, and so forth, which will be coming up July of next year. And then on the off year, we have a COPE convention. We had a COPE convention last year, which considered all the state representative, state senate, statewide race. And the officers of the AFL-CIO are also the officers of Texas COPE.
How important is Wallace and the AFL-CIO?
Well, as far as important, there's no doubt he's important because there's an awful lot of our membership the same as there is in other organizations that, you know, I guess you'd say sympathizes with Wallace's position. I think that's diminished considerably in the last couple of years, I guess. Could be for several reasons. His health, his change, kind of an attitude where he now changed to a more realistic position. He started out with a very strong position, and that's the only thing he could do to gain the notoriety that he did nationwide. But I think I saw the other day where the head of the Ku Klux Klan says that they can't support him anymore because he's become too black. But to answer your question, I think it's important in Texas. I think Wallace is important nationwide. I think it's, you know, whether you like it or not, when I say I think it's important, I don't mean that I in any way support it. I don't think it would be very difficult to do. But as far as his movement, certainly, it's important in Texas labor. We've fought the movement all along that he espoused and will continue to.
But if you're liberal and labor in Texas is liberal, why say did labor not support Castillo as the chairmanship fight last time?
Well, we had started almost 10 months ago and had worked up an agreement between all parties, liberals, conservatives, the governor's office, the senator's office, the county, the state chairman had agreed on a delegate selection process, an affirmative action program that would open up the party and bring about what I talked to you about in the beginning. More blacks, more brown, more labor. And we had gone on this process all along. 3 days before the state convention, Leonel Castillo called me from the airport and said, oh, by the way, he said, I'm thinking about running for state chairman. What do you think about it? I said, I think you're making a mistake. I said, number one, Leonel, you got a good name, Bill. Political circle, especially in Harris County, I don't think it's going to probably hurt you to get involved in something like that. And he said, well, I know I can't win, probably can't get 30% of the vote, but I'm thinking about running because I can't get nobody else to run. I said, Linnell, that's fine. If they, whoever you're talking about, wants to use you and you want to be used, you go right ahead. He said, well, would you support me? I said, no, I will not, because I've already publicly said that I was going to support the effort that we had put forth in opening up the party. That included supporting the re-election of the state chairman. So again, I guess a liberal can be realistic every once in a while too. And in that particular case, still considering myself a liberal, I was realistic. Liberal.
Were you surprised that he got more than 40% of the vote?
No, I expected him to get that much. I expected him to get that much, and a lot of it had to do with the unorganized way that the convention was run. If the convention had gotten started on time and run on schedule and everything, he probably got 35% of the vote. 55% just simply because of the unorganized way the convention went.
You see a coalition of labor blacks and Chicanos developing in the years ahead?
Oh, I think it'll continue. I don't say developing, that's...
Well, I mean, become stronger, become more more firm.
Well, I think so. I'm talking about Texas right now. I think so in Texas because of the close alliances that we've had with the Black Caucus, the Brown Caucus, and because of the, in the last 2 years, we've built up a strong A. Philip Randolph organization supported by the National FLCIO, Texas FLCIO in Texas. We've also built up a good organization of the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, which just came into being last year in Texas. We're going to continue to expand that. I think we've got, in our Human Relations Department, I think we've got two of the most able people, Black by the name of Johnny Henderson, and Brown by the name of Idis Gonzalez, who are full-time staff people, have the same salary and everything else, and all the rest of the staff do a fine job. And I think putting all that together, I think that the coalition of Black, Brown, labor will continue.
Do you publish a newspaper?
Yes. Yeah, we'd be glad to give you some copies of our most recent issue, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd just like to take a look at it. Okay. How many E. Philip Randolph Institutes are there in Texas?
Chapters, I believe we have either 8 or 9. Nine, I believe. I'm not sure.
How do they function? They represent, I mean, they cross union lines, am I correct? And serve basically to train Black union members in politics.
Right.
Political fundamentals.
Yeah, voter education.